Welcome to the More Perfect Union, the podcast that offers real debate without the hate. Tonight, from the right, we have...
DJ McGuire, a progressive conservative from Suffolk, Virginia.
Welcome back, DJ. And from the left, we have...
Greg Matuszak, a common sense liberal who, for the record, is recording this conversation from...
Wait, this is being recorded?
Yes, yes. You think New York lawyers are the only ones? No, I'm from Cincinnati, Ohio.
I'm Rebecca Kushminer, and oddly, I'm also recording this conversation as a progressive feminist from Kensington, Maryland. It's funny how in podcasts, everyone is recording the conversation. Like, what are the odds?
We're all paranoid.
Yeah, no, we're crazy. We're afraid we're going to lose something.
And I'm Kevin Kelton, a passionate moderate from Los Angeles, and I'm going to edit this thing surreptitiously. And Rudy Giuliani's going to be really upset because there's going to be edits in this thing. Did you hear that today? That he's claiming that there are like surreptitious edits in that thing?
No. Yeah. We'll talk about that later.
Kevin, do they total 18 and a half minutes?
Yes, Rosemary, they did. So before we get into the politics of the week, we want to talk about the articles that we post every week on our website, moreperfectunionpodcast.com. DJ, you wrote an article this week about the USA-EU deal.
Yes, and I use that term. In fact, I put it in quotes because it's not really a deal to do anything. But if you go to the website, you'll see more, or in this case, less.
And Rebecca, did you do a Pop Goes the Political Culture column this week?
I did. I got really outraged by the latest news about Les Moonves being a hostile boss to work for. And I listed a number of women in Hollywood who I thought would be better than him. And then I got outraged that Kimberly Guilfoyle at Fox News is apparently a hostile employee to work for. And she was showing pictures of some guy's genitalia. And since she's dating Donald Trump Jr., draw your own conclusions.
Oh, I'm going to draw a few conclusions from that.
I'm not going to draw anything from that. Thank you very much.
I'm not saying she was showing junk shots of the first son, but
no, that's the
some
worst
people.
Game,
many people are saying
worst game of Pictionary ever. Thank you.
Here's the thing: even if she did have junk shots of Donald Jr., that wouldn't be the worst photograph he's been shown in this week. I think the more embarrassing one was him in the airport with Mueller at the same time.
Oh, awkward.
Awkward.
Mueller did not appear to be embarrassed by that photo.
No. So it's 100 days to the midterms, exactly, as we record this. From what I am hearing in the news, a blue wave is looking a bit more likely this week. But I'm wondering whether democratic socialism ultimately is going to be a help or a hindrance to the Democrats in the midterms. I've had some heated conversations in open fire on Facebook about this with people who are fans of democratic socialism. So I'm wondering from this gang whether you think that the move to the left in the party or the power play from the left wing of the party is actually going to benefit the Democrats or end up biting us in the you-know-what.
I think this is a blip that only really hardcore political junkies are even paying attention to, because I haven't been in open fire this week and it is barely registering on my otherwise very left-wing liberal radar. Apart from Meghan McCain completely losing her mind talking about socialism on The View this week, and there was that wonderful Fox News clip. Did you guys see that?
No, what was it?
Oh, good Lord. They sent some Fox correspondent to a Democratic Socialist rally, and she came out of it. She's like, I was petrified. I mean, I can completely understand why people would want health care and education for their children. It's a very seductive message. It scared me. It was beyond belief. But
what about James Comey weighing in on the matter?
Yeah, James Comey maybe shouldn't weigh in on matters. Like he's weighed in enough. I think we're done listening to him. But you know, I feel like, you know, if you were knocking on doors for a candidate who wasn't a Democratic Socialist this week, nobody would be asking you, well, has he been endorsed by the Democratic Socialists? It just it it feels very beltway-ish. It doesn't feel like a real thing at all.
So this is where the two Americas, this is going to be my phrase this week, comes into play, because a lot of my friends and family who are conservatives only get their news from one source, and I feel it's
Meghan
not
McCain
very,
on The View, right?
Well, Meghan McCain from The View, but no, actually from Fox News, and they use the term socialist. They don't even use the word democratic socialist often, or they'll stress the socialist. And I think this has been picking up, but the problem is if you watch Fox News and get that as your main source, your mind is already made up. You're not going to give these guys a fair shake to begin with. So is it going to make a difference? No, but one side is already pushing that message. Okay, so is it going to reinforce one side? Yeah. It's being pushed.
I think
the message is you're going to hear that a lot more in this 100 days, and I think that the left is going to have to eventually answer it. What did you guys see the response coming that this generation, the millennials, when they hear socialism, they don't think communist and they don't think World War II, Russia or anything. They think Norway and
yes,
they
Sweden
think,
and Canada.
That may be true. I don't think a lot of millennials really know a lot or think a lot about the economics of Norway and Sweden and Denmark.
I disagree.
Well, okay.
I'm going to have to agree with Kevin on this one for a couple of reasons. One, if you actually look at the countries that most socialists in America, or I would call them social democrats, but I have a European mindset on this sort of thing. When they talk about the countries that they claim are socialist, and then you look at, say, the Heritage Foundation Index of Economic Freedom, you find that those countries actually have more economic freedom than we do. Socialist countries do not have more economic freedom than the United States of America. They're focused on healthcare. They're focused on education. And I can understand that because those are the two big issues right now. But that does not a socialist economy make. There are all sorts of other sectors out there. And democratic socialists, as they call themselves, have largely ignored them. As for the bigger picture, and I'll be brief on this one, this actually gives me a strange feeling of deja vu, because when I was a Republican in 2010, we had the same discussion about the Tea Party. Were they making the party look bad? Were they going to pull the party too far to the right? Were they going to be a problem in 2010? In terms of the House, they were not a problem at all. The Republicans cleaned up in 2010 in the House of Representatives. There were a couple of Senate seats that were lost because, you know, Christine O'Donnell, Sharon Engel were nominated.
Oh, Lord, she was nuts.
And various things.
Yeah. Okay, but that was then.
That was then. But 8 years later, I'm not seeing any Senate candidates yet who are so left-wing that they will lose the Democrat seats that they would already gain. So that's true.
It's really right. The House.
And it's only one seat in the House. It's a seat that's in Brooklyn and Queens that is so heavily Democratic that the Democratic nominee usually wins by 3-1. So I'm not seeing anything, make a long story short, too late, I know. I'm not really seeing anything that threatens the Democrats in November so far.
And keep in mind, as always, the House is where crazy comes out to play, and it happens on both sides of the aisle. And that's how we've got Jim Jordan running for Speaker of the House, and it might
okay,
be
yes.
how
extremism,
we get...
Extremism, you're right, does rear its ugly head more than the House.
Would you say extremism is something that the House must wrestle with?
Oh, I'm not going to say that, DJ.
That's a Jim Jordan joke for people that didn't catch it. I just want to clarify one.
And also a Dennis Hastert joke.
Yeah, that's true. One Speaker of the House and one who wants to be Speaker of the House, but we'll talk about that later. My concern with democratic socialism, you know, people have been beating me up on social media this week because I just hate the word socialism. And frankly, I agree with a lot of the platform of democratic socialists. I just don't want people that call themselves democratic socialists running for high office in the United States because they will lose races that otherwise Democrats could win. And here's my point. People say, oh, you're hung up on words, or we can educate voters. You know, I think we all will agree that politics is about perception and presentation. And, you know, when Republicans run, you know, Nixon didn't run as an authoritarian. He ran as a law and order politician. Trump didn't run as a fascist. You know, they don't call themselves these things.
He kind of did,
he just
actually.
Is. He, no, he is, but he didn't call himself that. That's my point. If you had somebody walking around calling themselves a Republican fascist or a fascist Republican, do you think that they would win? Maybe in some red districts they would. But but you see what my point is. It's that it's the label that I have a problem with. The policies, except for single payer, which I personally am not a fan of, the policies are sound. It's calling yourself a democratic socialist that I think is toxic in America.
Well, with
politics.
All due respect, hang on, Greg, for a second. I would say some of the policies are not necessarily so sound. But putting that to one side.
Well, I was saying for me.
Putting that to one side, I think what a lot of younger voters, and it's not just millennials, it's a lot of Gen X voters don't get either, is that for voters who are older than 45 or who are precocious and 45, as I was as a teenager, it's not, you know, we don't just think of the Soviet Union when we think of socialism. We know about Great Britain's experiment with democratic socialism in the 1970s. We know about the Winter of Discontent. We know about the disaster that Britain led itself into and how it needed to be rescued from it by Margaret Thatcher. And so there are a lot of voters in their 40s, in their 50s, in their 60s who could be won over by a democratic message that appeals to the center, that appeals to the right on economic issues. And my problem with the democratic socialists is that they seem to think that the left, the movement towards the left on social issues, that is real and that has happened, also means a movement to the left on economic issues, which I am not really seeing.
Okay, Greg, you were going to say something?
Yeah, so now that you have a soapbox here, you have a platform. If you were to rebrand this group and you didn't want to call them the Tea Party, you're a creative person. You've written stuff before. What would you rename them? I mean, the Tea Party was renamed and instead of like the
That's a question to me.
Yeah, so what would you call
them? Okay. Well, I'd call them Democrats, but going back to something that you said at the beginning of this segment, Greg, I think you hit on it. You talked about two Americas. You know, you guys are going to laugh at me, and in fact, all of our listeners are going to laugh at me for what I'm about to say. But you know who would have been a perfect national candidate for our time? John Edwards. Because John Edwards articulated the policies and the ideology of what is now democratic socialism better than pretty much anyone except for maybe Bernie Sanders, who's out there doing it now. John Edwards was a Southerner from North Carolina. You know, he was a polished speaker, and he spoke from the heart about all of the issues that now more liberal Democrats are getting behind. Unfortunately, because of his own personal peccadilloes, he's no longer on the scene, and he shouldn't be. But gosh, I wish we had somebody like him in the mix.
Yeah, you know, I always talk about that two Americas. Because of John Edwards, and I voted for him like as many times. I think I voted for him like 7 times in 1 year. I didn't, but I actually mentioned
from state to state.
Yeah, I did.
You were the guy in the bus that the Republicans keep warning us about.
Exactly. I seen him speak live. I think 3 times, 4 times. I'd met him once or twice. I was a really, really big John Edwards, and it broke my heart. His downfall. I completely agree.
Downfall, you know.
What?
It was such a dumb downfall.
They're all dumb downfalls. I mean, yeah, they're all
dumber than Gary Hart.
Yeah, but this
and that was dumb.
One thing that I think is that the Democrats need to be very careful about is the assumption that if a so-called democratic socialist, and Greg, you didn't ask me, but I would say what they should call themselves are the Social Democrats of America, because at one, that sounds better, and two, that more aligns with
yes.
the rest of the Western world. But one thing that they talk about that for some reason centrist Democrats and moderate Democrats just seem to recoil from, because it was democratic socialists who said it, was the idea of breaking up Immigration and Customs Enforcement, abolishing ICE. And I call myself a conservative Democrat, and I would love to see ICE blown up. In fact, I would like to see the entire Department of Homeland Security broken up and redistributed among the various departments as it was back before 9/11. You know, Cato Barron was a National Review columnist, a conservative until the day she died last year. And she repeatedly, she at one point said, conservatives are going to complain about DHS actions for decades. She didn't recognize that conservatives would be wholly swallowed by Donald Trump nonsense, but that's a whole other story. But my point is, you know, the Immigrations and Customs Enforcement as an agency, frankly, has a horrible culture. It's terrible. And there is no reason that only the left has to say, we really need to consider and we really need to implement breaking this agency up and moving immigration regulation into, say, the State Department or some other department or some other agency that actually is more humane than ICE clearly is. Agencies have cultures.
Well, what was INS under pre-9/11? Was it part of Treasury? I know Secret Service was Treasury.
No, that's Secret, yeah, that's Secret Service.
Yeah, where was INS? Was it under State or was it under Justice?
Immigration and I'm guessing Immigration and Naturalization Services was under Justice, but I'm not entirely certain. Let me find my phone and I can figure that out.
But DJ, you know, I want to jump in and point out, now you just called for breaking up the Department of Homeland Security. And as you well know, Rick Perry once called for breaking up the Department of Energy, and he is now the Energy Secretary of the United States. Scott Pruitt wanted to do away with the EPA, and he was the secretary, or he was the head of the EPA for a while. So I won't be surprised if in the next administration you end up being the Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security.
you've basically written your resume for that, DJ. You are under consideration.
Okay, so let's turn to economics. We went further on the topic of the midterms that we had planned to. So this week, the Q2 GDP report came out. It was 4.1 growth for the second quarter. It was impressive.
Yay.
Trump is taking a lot of credit for that. Maybe he should. We all know that during the Obama administration, he hit that or better, I think, 3 or 4 times. But you know what? Still, 4.1 is a good quarterly report, and the economy does have a lot of things going for it. But I'm wondering, what do you guys think? Is it truly a Trump turnaround, or is this just, as people say, a sugar high?
It's a sugar high. It's a sugar high, and I'm going to hijack this conversation.
Yeah. Okay, DJ says it's a sugar high, and every time DJ says it's a sugar high, I think he's talking about agricultural tariffs. I'm like, sugar's unaffected by the tariff. But I'm kind of a dork about agricultural stuff because my husband's an ag policy expert.
That's okay.
You know, I think it's fine. I think it's part of an upward trajectory. I think it's part of a trend that I really like seeing. I don't begrudge any party this kind of progress. We definitely want an improving economy. The problem is that the economy is mainly improving for the upper percentiles of income brackets, and the wage gap remains vast, and the 1% has a heck of a lot more money than the 99%. And I lately on Facebook, I sound like a 1920s radical, and I'm talking about the capital class and the labor class. And I may have suggested eating the rich recently, because we've got to do something about real wages for people, especially people in hourly jobs.
Just, you know, please, we don't suggest eating the rich. Just eat rich foods. Don't eat the rich.
That's how you get gout.
Wait, the rich cause gout too? Man, you know, the rich.
Don't get your
No wonder nobody liked
rich.
Marie Antoinette.
DJ, what
Yeah,
what
I was
going
to say, once again, I have to say, Rebecca, it's worse than you think, because this is a sugar high. If you, I took a deep dive into the numbers, and over a quarter of the growth that has been touted came from increases in exports. And that is almost certainly designed to do one thing and one thing only, and that is to beat the retaliatory tariffs that kicked into place on July 1 in response to the idiotic tariffs that this administration imposed. So if you look at the parts of GDP that were not affected by beating the tariff or by governments turning on their spending spigots, you really see it's about 2.6, 2.7%. And I mean, that's not bad. It certainly beats recession, contraction, but it's largely in line with what we've seen over the past three springs, and this is the spring quarter that's being analyzed here.
DJ, can I just jump in to make sure that I understand you, because I think you're making a really interesting point. Are you saying that if it wasn't for the trade wars, that 4.1 would have been more in line with 2.6?
I'm saying without the...
How do you know that?
So you're saying people bought stuff before the prices got, or sold stuff
right.
before prices went up
right.
in other countries,
yes.
or bought
right.
stuff
I,
before
I know
prices
that,
went
but
up.
I'm just
here.
Wondering how did you?
Sure. What I did
that?
Was I looked at when the report from the Bureau of Economic Analysis came out. They have tables that come with it, and I looked at the tables, and they showed essentially the building blocks how they got to that 4.1 figure. Consumption was about 2.7. Increase in exports was about 1.3-1.4%, and then there was some inventory reductions that were countered by some government spending increases and various other things. So the point is, a large chunk of that 4.1% growth was due to increases in exports, and that's foreigners beating the price hikes that come from tariffs. And so what you would then expect is, if they essentially moved all of their purchases into the second quarter to avoid the tariffs, then you're going to have drops in exports in the third quarter, which is going to end up dragging down the third quarter growth rate. I'm figuring to maybe about 2.5%, but possibly even below that. And so therefore, that's the sugar high part of this figure. The part of this figure that does not seem to be related to the tariff issue, which is domestic consumption, that showed about a 2.7% increase, 2.7% growth. And again, that's in line with what we've seen for the second quarter of 2016, 2015, and 2014. So I'm not really seeing anything out of the ordinary, except for foreigners desperate to beat price hikes that come from tariffs. That's not the Trump administration doing great things. That's the Trump administration doing stupid things, and foreigners acting accordingly before they get the hit from retaliatory tariffs.
Can I just point out that this is what DJ does for fun on his own time? He dives into Bureau of Economic Analysis charts and graphs and extrapolates different numbers than what they're publishing.
I got to tell you something. This is why I love this podcast. I was actually thinking today, DJ, I was wondering what that difference would be if it hadn't been for the trade war effect. And I had no idea that it could be actually quantified. I love the fact that you actually knew that.
Hey, when does the third quarter numbers come out?
Third quarter numbers come out the last Friday in October, which is the 26th, if memory serves, about a week and a half before election.
So a week before the election.
Right. Oh, my goodness. You're kidding.
Just around the same day that James Comey will release his next Hillary Clinton memo. Right around that time.
Yeah, I got nothing for that. I got nothing.
But you have to understand, though, in, once again, the two Americas, this week, you know, while we were talking about all the shenanigans in the Trump administration and pretty much everything else that we're going to talk about for the rest of the thing, Fox News was talking about what a banner week it is and how great USA and the economics. And I was the first one on this podcast, and I'll pat myself on the back for saying, if the Trump administration did something right, I would be like, this is great. We want our president to succeed if America succeeds. And if they...
Yeah, absolutely.
And we can't begrudge him, because that means America is succeeding. And we always want it. And as far as the wage gap, we had that same complaint with Obama. We have been complaining about wages have not gone up.
No, the wage gap sucks. The wage gap has sucked
for
years. Since 1973. So my entire
right.
life has been a study in suckage of wage gap. And it's, again, eat the rich. That's all I got left. I mean,
right.
that is my economic solution at this point.
Rebecca, you should eat the Fed first, because it's been loose monetary policy that has led to so many asset bubbles, so much wealth inequality. And the biggest driver of income inequality is, in fact, wealth inequality. So if you want to eat the rich, eat the Fed first.
See, I want to eat the. I will eat the Fed, but I also want to eat everybody who's been busting unions, because I think union busting has led to disorganized negotiations on the labor side of things, or no negotiations on the labor side of things, because there is nobody with whom to negotiate.
Okay, so now I'm in a quandary because I don't know whether to name this episode Two Americas or Eat the Fed.
Either one. Eat the Two Americas.
Well, you know what? I think there are two Americas, and in one of them, Ivanka Trump is the daughter of a president and has her own line of clothing and purses and other apparel.
Hand apparel, gloves.
But in the other America, the one that I see coming, Ivanka Trump closes all those businesses down because I think she's planning to run for senator of New York in either 20 or 22.
That is entirely possible. In the Fire and the Fury, the guy who wrote that book, whose name I'm completely forgetting.
Michael Wolff.
Postulated that Ivanka is in fact contemplating political runs and that she and Jared negotiated this, you know, at some point in marriage counseling or whatever the hell it is they do for fun. But the other thing to remember is that Ivanka Trump owning a business, even one that she theoretically was detached from, is an ethics problem, particularly since she was, you know, applying for like trademarks in China and all kinds
of
crazy
stuff like that. It's a constitutional problem too.
A constitutional problem, emoluments. And the other thing is her sales were dropping precipitously. And while she was still earning money off that, I was just reading some numbers and she had a bump right after the inauguration when everyone felt like she was being unfairly persecuted. But after that, everyone remembered that her clothes only look good on people who are built like Ivanka Trump and stopped buying them.
They won't look good on Chinese women.
Right. They look good on, I mean, you really have to be about 5'9" and, you know, have a very, very slim up and down figure. They're just not flattering on most people with actual human bodies who don't have a lot of time to work out. There's nothing wrong with the clothes. I searched them up. I wanted to see what her line looked like, but they're not a universal fit.
But you see, I have a different theory about her. You know, that may be true.
We're going to find out that Kevin has a closet full of Ivanka Trump clothes.
And they look fabulous on
her.
I'm sure they do.
And I am not 5'9 and svelte.
You know, and your hips are quite slim.
But my sense of her is, of course, no, you can never know these people, but my sense of her from what I've seen on television is she probably doesn't have the need for money that her father has. Ivanka Trump probably knows that she is set for life very comfortably and her children are set for life very comfortably, even if she doesn't earn another penny going forward. I think she wants to be the first woman president, but she needs a platform to do it from. She can't do it because she was just the daughter of the president. So she's going to run for senator. You know, let's put it this way. Kirsten Gillibrand comes up for re-election in 2020. Chuck Schumer comes up for re-election in 2022. Both of those would be fascinating races to see her go against one of those two sitting Democratic senators. My sense is if Kirsten Gillibrand starts making noise or announces that she's running for president, I think Ivanka is going to see that as a potential open Senate seat, and I think she's going to run in 2020 for that open Senate seat.
And she'll get waxed.
And that is entirely possible, but waxed. I feel like there's a lot of baggage. And
well, of course there is.
And of course she has
little chance in New York. But the Trumps don't think that way. They think they're impervious to this shit.
And I also think that what you said about her need for money is mitigated to a certain extent by her husband's need for revenge. I think he is fixated on getting back at everybody who put his father in jail. And we should not discount the fact that he is a ruthless predator and has been politicking that way the entire time.
And you know what else a senator does? They suggest judicial appointments in their state. And I think Trump would love it if he had a Republican, and especially his daughter, there to suggest judicial appointments.
Yeah. Trump's relationship with his daughter is really screwed up.
Well, there's this movie, there's a documentary came out in 2003 called Born Rich. Have you guys ever seen it?
I've heard of it, though.
Right. It was made by Jamie Johnson, who was heir to the Johnson & Johnson fortune. And pretty much this guy made when turning 21, they said, okay, you're making $21 billion just for being who you are. And he went around and he interviewed other ultra rich, including Ivanka Trump. And it was a very young, it was like, once again, like 20 years ago. And she was young and she said, no, this is wrong. We have a responsibility. And it was a really interesting take on all these ultra, these heirs. And, you know, you get the sense, like Kevin says, she's not that into the money. Chances are, I think she really did want to do something right. But she's beholden now to the crimes of her father. You know, she is not, you know, she, I think, really did want to represent women. And when she says these things, she's like, sure, I can do this. Oh, I can't? Oh, okay. She'll never get a chance to because she's got that Trump name, and it will be a hard lesson for her, and she'll be shocked that no one will give her a chance. And I, you know, it's almost a tragedy.
I think you guys, I guess I'm the outlier here. I think that people hate her father. I think that people don't like her brothers and don't like her husband. I'm not sure that Ivanka Trump's brand, and I don't mean her clothing, I mean her public brand, is all that damaged by the association.
Oh, I disagree.
I think she's still fairly popular.
I think people have been hoping from day one that Ivanka Trump would be a moderating force on her crazy-ass, weird, racist father, and she has not been. I think the charges of complicity have been entirely correct.
Well, we don't know that. We don't know that.
Because
has Kelly been a moderating force? Has Mattis been a moderating force? We don't know who has been a moderating force and who hasn't been. For all we know, she's been lobbying her you-know-what off to try to moderate him on these issues, and he just won't budge.
That means she's ineffective.
But nobody's going to forgive her for that if she can't control the guy who's been, you know.
Well, no one can control him.
But everyone thinks Ivanka should be the one who can.
And more importantly than...
But this is politics, Kevin. Reality doesn't matter. Donald Trump is our president.
You are all like the people on an airplane who look at the mother of a crying 8-month-old and say, why can't she control her kids?
I'm not saying we are. I'm saying the electorate is.
And Donald Trump is not 8 months old. He just acts like it. He is actually an adult. But the fact that more important than any of that, than all of that put together, is the fact that if Ivanka Trump runs as a Republican in New York State, she is going to get waxed because she is a Republican in New York State. New York has been an over...
Alphonse D'Amato. Jack Kemp.
It has been...
I don't know.
Okay. Jack Kemp.
Okay, he was a congressman. He was in a red district. But Alphonse D'Amato.
It has been 20...
Oh my God, Al D'Amato, don't even start.
It's been a quarter century since Alphonse D'Amato won an election. You do realize that, right?
Well, I don't know what he's run for lately.
He hasn't. When Chuck Schumer,
maybe his homeowners association.
When Chuck Schumer beat him in 1998, that was it. He retired. He was done. That was the end of him. No Republican not named George Pataki has won an election for all of New York State in 25 years, and Ivanka Trump is not George Pataki.
DJ, how the hell did you know that Chuck Schumer was elected in 1998?
Because I remember when he was elected in 1998 when he beat Al D'Amato.
That's just amazing.
That was one of the Clash of the Titans of that year.
DJ, you are a national treasure.
He's the Sheldon Cooper of politics, and we have him on our show. He is an eidetic memory.
So the spinoff of this podcast is going to be Young DJ.
And it's going to be like a 14-year-old DJ reading the transcript of the Watergate hearing.
The More Perfect Union. Real debate with a lot more alcohol.
So let's move on now to the fun stuff in the news. The Russian investigation and Michael Cohen's recording or recordings. There's now reportedly 100 of them. Giuliani said today there are dozens of them, and one has come out so far, at least at this time. What do you guys think? Is this the end of the line for Trump, or is this the end of the line for Democrats who are counting on impeachment? Or as somebody here said, the Dems are counting their impeachments before they hatch.
Like little impeachment. Cheep, cheep, cheep.
So what do you think? I mean, is this Michael Cohen thing, has it escalated it, or is it just another ding in the armor?
I mean, it's definitely escalated it, and it's definitely put more thoughts, as in possibilities, like, well, he definitely knew about this, but nothing is firm, and we keep doing this to ourselves, like, this is it. This is the one that's going to, these are all the emails. This is the server. And, you know, it just keeps piling up, but nothing solid yet. So, no, not until.
That we know of.
No, right. Not until November. And unless Mueller, who's very smart, has a different corroborating witness than Cohen. If everything weighs on Cohen, it's not going to stick.
That's a big if. You know, they will have corroborating witnesses. You know, I think it was Cohen. No, somebody came out this week and said that there are other people who can corroborate, that were in the room when Cohen heard this stuff.
That was Cohen. Cohen himself said that.
Trump was yelling at about a Coke.
Okay. Cohen himself said that.
What if there were other people in that room, whether it was Hope Hicks, whether it was somebody else on the campaign staff, and these people, you know, are they going to lie under oath if Cohen is telling the truth? And, you know, I think he is.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, you know, honestly, I think this whole thing is a sideshow. We all agree here, sitting in this circle, that Trump is corrupt. He's been running a business in a corrupt manner for however many decades, and his presidency is corrupt. And Michael Cohen has been a witness to all of that. Whether or not that will end his presidency remains to be seen. And it has to do with the makeup of Congress and what Robert Mueller is willing to lay before them. But, you know, these tapes, yeah, there's shady crap going on, and Michael Cohen has seen all of it, and Donald Trump burned that bridge. So it's fun. It's like eating cotton candy.
I'm not
counting on it to change the trajectory of what's going on.
No, it doesn't change the trajectory. It just speeds it up.
It does. Yeah, it speeds. I mean, I have said all along that we are not going to prove collusion with the Russians because that is just too amorphous to prove. But if Robert Mueller, if some investigator, the Southern District of New York, whomever, is able to start digging into Trump's financial crimes, then somebody's going to be able to walk into the Oval Office with a stack of files this thick and say, boom, I have 30 years of crimes that I could prosecute you on. I could take apart your empire brick by brick, or you could decline to run again. It is your choice. And that is the only way I see any of this going down.
No. Well, what if there's a Democratic Congress and if, Mueller, releases
I
a searing report.
I think there is a national appetite for impeachment.
Oh, I disagree.
I don't think there is bloodlust enough. I think there are too many people out there who still love this man, and I think backlash and the outcry would make this controversial and extremely.
It would
damaging.
Be controversial. There would be people that would be upset, but a Democratic Congress is going to do what a Democratic Congress wants to do.
What I had always said up until this week, or at least I think I had, was that we knew that there was attempted collusion from the Trump campaign. That's what the June 9th, 2016 meeting was about. The Mueller indictment from maybe 2.5 weeks ago now, which detailed the Russian behavior in terms of stealing emails, stealing voter analytics and such, that shows that there actually were crimes committed. You know, collusion or no collusion, there were actual crimes committed here. So what you have now is the possibility of Trump campaign staffers being involved in a criminal conspiracy, whether you think collusion is a crime or not.
No, conspiracy is the crime. People use the word collusion, but conspiracy
What Cohen's information, assuming it came from him, because his lawyer says it didn't. What Cohen's revelation, which is more important than any other.
You're believing Lanny Davis here,
well,
DJ?
Well, that's an issue. But my point is, what Cohen's revelation on Wednesday, which is more important, I think, than any of the recording so far, that Trump himself approved that meeting is the first. Cohen has now become the first witness to actually link Donald Trump directly to that criminal conspiracy. If there are other witnesses and if they corroborate him, this is a whole new ballgame. What you're going to see, and you're actually seeing it already, is you're seeing Republicans, particularly the Trump and proletariat, as I call them, start to shift their conversation from there was no collusion to collusion was okay because it's not a crime. Actually, it is a crime. We talked about it. But collusion is okay because it stopped Hillary Clinton. There are now people who are saying, thank you, Russia, for helping us stop Hillary Clinton from getting elected. And it's usually
there are people that think it was a good thing that the Russians did this.
And so what is going to happen is the American people as a whole are going to have to ask themselves, is it really okay to have a tyrannical foreign power that slaughters LGBT community members wherever it finds them, or at least arrests them and imprisons them, slaughters Muslims en masse if they happen to be in Chechnya, props up
slaughters journalists.
Yes, repeatedly kills journalists and dissidents and exiled dissidents in London. Props up a regime that chlorine bombs its own people. I'm talking about Bashar Assad in Syria. Is it really okay that that guy led a criminal conspiracy to get someone elected with that person's help? I would say the answer would be no. That's the American people who decide that's not okay. But that's a question that that's a debate we have to have. Democrats are going to ensure that we have it, and that is a good thing. I am still naive enough to think that the overwhelming majority of the American people will say no, that's not what we want. But first, we have to see how credible Cohen is now and whether or not there are other witnesses that can back him up. The reality is, after the events that have occurred since I was last on, which include the Helsinki summit fiasco, the concept of impeachment is now much more likely and I think much more tolerable to the American people than it was 3 weeks ago. And we have to recognize that.
I'm just not as optimistic as you, DJ. I think the American people feel burned by past impeachments, and I'm not sure anybody wants to go through the chaos.
You know, let's talk about that for a second, because I hear this all the time. I want to address that issue. You know, people say all the time, oh, if the Democrats try to impeach Trump, his popularity will rise like Bill Clinton's did. You know, there'll be a red wave in 2018. First of all, it wouldn't happen before the midterms.
No, there's no chance of that.
But when people analogize it to the only other impeachment proceeding in the 20th century, it's a bad analogy. Bill Clinton was impeached for lying about a sex scandal, okay? And he did perjure himself, and that is a crime. It's true. But the American people at that time, at least a lot of Democrats, did not feel that should be an impeachable offense. Donald Trump is not Bill Clinton. He will never, in his entire life, be one half as popular as Bill Clinton. Donald Trump is a con artist, a charlatan, a horrible human being, and he is a criminal. And if there is evidence of criminal conduct from him, his children, or in his campaign, believe me, the American people as a whole will not be resentful if there's an impeachment hearing. He may not be convicted, but it's not going to make him the most popular guy in America.
I worry that it's going to be a circus and that
It will be a circus.
But ultimately,
enjoy the circus.
Will come
grab your popcorn. I remember those 1998 hearings. They were great television.
God, they were annoying too.
They were great.
I don't think anything will happen. I don't think we get untrumped except by election.
I don't necessarily dispute that because I don't think there will be enough Senate Republicans to convict him. But I do think. You know, we have to remember, for all the talk about how popular Bill Clinton was after and during the impeachment, his party did not win the election in 2000. For all the talk about, you know, the impeachment of Andrew Johnson being...
Well, you know what, the Supreme Court had something to say about that.
The fact of the matter is Al Gore got 48.4% and he lost his home state. As you know, and in fact, if you look at the three times that impeachment have been considered, 1868, 1974, and 1998, the incumbent party, lost every time. Andrew Johnson was a Democrat, and even most Republicans thought he shouldn't be removed from office, but the Democrats did not win in 1868. Richard Nixon resigned before he could be impeached. The Republicans lost in 1976, and I just mentioned 2000. So if the Democrats, if there is a case, and if there is a case where 55 to 60 to 65% of the American people say, yeah, Donald Trump really should not be president based on what I know, then yeah, the Senate may not remove him from office. But I think that would certainly help whatever Democrat runs against Donald Trump in 2020.
I couldn't agree more. I totally agree. You know, at best, there will be 55 Democratic senators, and that's not going to happen. There might be 51 or 52 Democratic senators by 2019. So it would take another 15, 16, 17 Republicans to vote with the Democrats, assuming the Democrats stood together, to vote for impeachment. The odds of us getting those 15 or 17 votes are unlikely, but I wouldn't be surprised if we got 10 of them. And if you had 60, 61, 63, 64 senators voting to convict the man, even if he's acquitted, that's going to be a real stinging black eye going into the 2020 primaries. So now, okay, I've stood on my soapbox longer than I should have on this point. And I looked fabulous in my Ivanka dress while I was doing it, by the way.
And carrying an Ivanka handbag and wearing Ivanka diamonds from the Ivanka, you know, corrupt diamond conglomerate.
Let's turn to another fashion chic person, which is North Korea's Kim Jong-un, who, you know, we gave a little credit to Trump earlier today or earlier in this podcast for achieving some good economic numbers. And I'm going to give him a little credit right now for getting some of those remains of the Korean soldiers lost during the Korean War, excuse me, from the American soldiers lost during the Korean War, getting them back today. However, that said, there's always a caveat with me. I giveth and then I taketh away. He got back 55 sets of remains. Now, that's something. But as I understand it, there are some 53,000 missing soldiers from that war.
5,300.
5,300. What did I say? I'm sorry.
53,000, you said.
Oh, thank you for correcting me. 5,300. And 55 sets means that he got about 1% of them back. So good for those guys. They're now in the elite 1%. But it's not really what we were expecting out of North Korea when they promised to return the remains.
You know, I got to rant on this because this is Kim Jong-un stringing Donald Trump along. He's not going to do anything on denuclearization. He's going to demand all sorts of money for his regime. He already has the summit and Donald Trump's warm words. But he's just going to send, you know, a few dozen remains of American soldiers to stay in Donald Trump's good graces while he keeps behaving badly in his own country and in the rest of the world. As much as this is going to annoy people and anger a lot of people, I would much prefer a president who is concerned about the Koreans who are actually living today, who have gone through starvation as a forced policy twice over the last 20 years. I would like a president who's more concerned about North Korean dissidents and political prisoners who are held in political prisons that are the size of small cities today. I would like a president who's more concerned about North Koreans who are so desperate to escape that they are willing to be slaves in just about every sense of the word in Northeast China because the Chinese government sends them back whenever they find them. I would like to see a president who's worried about the Japanese children of the 1970s who were abducted by North Korea and who may very well be still alive. I would like a president who is concerned about those things as well as the remains of American soldiers. And I would frankly say that those soldiers who gave their lives to stop North Korean advancement and then to actually get rid of the North Korean regime in late 1950 or the 1951, I suspect a lot of them would actually be very sad to know that the shells that they left behind are more important to the president of the United States than the Koreans that they tried to liberate. But that's just me.
Yeah.
DJ, you remind me of a scene in the movie MASH where the priest is trying to perform last rites over the body of a fallen soldier, and a surgeon is operating on another man, and he asks the priest to come, you know, hold something, assist him in some way, and says to the priest, "I'm sorry, Father, but that man is dead and this one is alive, and that's just the truth."
Yeah.
All right. The other thing that I guess we really should talk about is North Korea also has started to dismantle key missile facilities. Okay, and that was reported in the New York Times.
Wait, really dismantle, or is this the one that collapsed under the weight of itself?
Really dismantle.
I haven't read that.
Well, okay, well, I don't want to say the old gray lady is lying, but actually I've heard this from other sources also that are pretty accurate. A lot of pieces. So there's that too. Which we should give credit to that. Now, you know, I also saw that there's just a lot of other reports, but nothing has been confirmed such as that. Everything else that I've read can't be confirmed. Like, there was one report that said that they are expanding their nuclear facilities, but that was unconfirmed. And there were things like that, that they were going underwater with their nuclear facilities.
You know, and that is part of the problem with this whole Korean nuclear discussion, is that it's all unconfirmable.
But I will say this, the taking down of the test site, that was confirmed, okay, without a doubt.
But you know, but so much else is not confirmed.
Right.
Unlike in the Iran deal, where there were multilateral inspectors being allowed in to check on everything and we could get all kinds of confirmation, this so-called deal that Donald Trump set up, Mr. Art of the deal himself, nothing is confirmable. We are relying on the honesty and integrity of a regime with no known honesty or integrity.
Such a shitty
and the
deal.
Scary, such and the a fact of the deal. Matter is that there are here's some things that are confirmable. Not a single Japanese abductee, alive or dead, has been returned since Donald Trump went to Singapore. Not a single political prisoner has been released since Donald Trump went to Singapore. No genuine human or political rights have been granted to the North Korean people since Donald Trump went to Singapore. No nuclear weapons themselves have been dismantled in a verifiable manner since Donald Trump went to Singapore. The things that should matter to us have seen no movement from North Korea since Donald Trump went to Singapore. And that is a fact. Those are facts. And those are the facts about which we should be concerned. I get the families want closure, and I get they want to be able to bury the remains of their soldiers at home. I understand that, and I appreciate that. But the fact of the matter is there are bigger issues regarding North Korea that this administration is simply flatly ignoring because Donald Trump wants good press, and he wants to tug on the heartstrings of the American people.
Yeah, although I got to say this, Greg, you were right. I found it. It was from July 23rd. It says North Korea started dismantling a missile test engine site or a missile engine test site.
Wait a second, Kevin. You just couldn't take my word for it? You had to look that up? Wait a second. This was like, oh,
trust
Greg,
but verify.
Greg, you were right. Well, shit the bed. Greg, you were right. I don't know how I feel about this all of a sudden.
I thought you'd like the fact that I, you know.
I didn't call you a liar. I don't know how I feel about this.
Well, I wasn't calling you a liar. I was calling you misinformed.
I didn't call you fake news, but.
Hey, speaking of that. Trump had a meeting with the publisher of the New York Times today, and you know what they discussed?
What?
Fake news.
No!
And here's the upshot of it.
I can't do a head desk, so I'm doing a head mic.
DJ is banging his forehead on his microphone. We can see that you can't. So Trump releases a tweet today saying how he had this great meeting with the publisher of the New York Times, and they discussed fake news and how the media is so corrupt and everything. And that spurred the publisher of the New York Times, A.G. Sulzberger, to release a response to the president in which he said, you know, this meeting was supposed to be off the record, not for attribution. But since the president has now talked about it in tweets, I guess I could talk about it publicly. And he said, that's exactly not what we spoke about. And I'm reading from the press release now that just came out today. I told him, Trump, that although the phrase fake news is untrue, I am far more concerned about him labeling journalists the enemy of the people. I warned him that this inflammatory language is contributing to a rise in threats against journalists and will lead to violence worldwide. So Trump actually lied about what he told the New York Times.
No, I'm not sure that Trump lied about what he told the New York Times. I think he lied about what the New York Times said in response. And probable that Trump was sitting there talking, and never once listened to what the publisher of the New York Times was actually saying. Like he was blabbing and flapping his gums so much. I'm doing a like talky hand gesture with my hand that everyone can see except the listeners.
Well, here's what Trump said in the tweet. He said, spent much time talking about the vast amounts of fake news being put out by the media and how the fake news has morphed into the phrase enemy of the people. Sulzberger said that he told Trump that there is no fake news and that that term is hurting the American discourse.
And even beyond that, if memory serves, Sulzberger also noted that Trump talked about how proud he was that the term fake news is being used by other politicians around the world, and Sulzberger actually had to tell him that those other politicians were dictators who arrest, imprison, and do worse things to journalists. That, frankly, should tell us all we need to know about Trump's blind spots and how dangerous they are.
Yep.
Well, I mean, this was the guy who was pointing to what's-his-face Erdogan and saying, yeah, this guy's doing it right. You know? I mean, Trump's blind spots are as big as Trump's... I'm sorry, I shouldn't make fat jokes about the president.
No, you're better than that. You're better than that.
I am. I'm better than that. I'm stopping myself. Sorry.
Yeah, stop that. I mean, you know, I have this discussion with someone every time I say, look, the president lied here. The president lied here. They always say, all politicians lie. And they do. And, you know... Obama, you know, if you like your doctor, keep your doctor. That was named Lie of the Year that year.
And in fact, it was.
And they're right.
And
Kevin disagrees with us on that one. But all politicians lie at some point. But it's now to the point where everyone just says, well, what are you going to do? It's Donald Trump, and he's going to tell a lie. What are you going to do? We can't hold him accountable.
Can we kick him in the head?
Something. Like, we should be able to respond in some way to the fact that the president lies like the rest of his brief.
The first thing you do is you don't, obviously, we don't address Trump with this because none of us know him, but you address his voters. And you say, look, for the most part, you told us over and over again, one of the reasons you like Donald Trump was because he told it like it is.
Because he wasn't a politician.
Right. So as you are now acknowledging that he doesn't tell it like it is, he tells it like it isn't over and over and over and over and over again. So when you sit there and say, well, all politicians lie, the fact of the matter is, the first thing is, this president lies more than probably all the other politicians put together. And I say that knowing how much all of the other ones lied. So the question that really they have to ask themselves is, okay, are you just at the point where you are voting for a politician because you like the lies you hear and you don't give a damn about the truth? Or are you willing to say, okay, wait a minute, we really need to take a step back and actually try to find some elected officials who will tell the truth and who are honest, and we can begin by finding someone who is more honest than Donald Trump to be in the White House? And many Trump voters may very well pick the former. They like the lies he tells. Well, those are the ones who we know we can completely ignore in terms of trying to figure out who to win over in 2020 and save our energy.
Okay, and with that, we want to thank everybody for listening. Please follow us on Twitter at #MPUPodcast and on Facebook at facebook.com/MorePerfectUnionPodcast and share our link on your Facebook timeline so your friends can discover us as well. Okay, so any thoughts for the week to come?
I hear the New York Times has a new menu. I think I'm going to order a Salzburger with fries.